Good day and welcome to today's TGS third quarter 2010 webcast and telephone conference. Today's conference is being recorded. At this time, I would like to turn the conference over to your host today, Mr. Robert Hobbs. Please go ahead, sir.
Thanks, Monica. Hello and welcome to TGS's third quarter 2010 conference call. My name is Robert Hobbs and I'm CEO of TGS. Joining me today is Christian Johansson, our CFO, and Karen Eltoil, our Vice President of Business Development. Earlier today, we posted our third quarter earnings release and a presentation of the results on our website. I hope that you have had an opportunity to view that release, and we'll now just give a brief summary of the main points before opening the call to your questions. Our Q3 2010 net revenues of $130.1 million were up 4% compared to the same period 1 year ago. Net late sales of $100.3 million improved significantly and were up 30% from late sales in Q3 2009 and up 55% from Q2 2010. For the first 9 months of 2010, net revenues were $390.7 million, an increase of 22% compared to the same period in 2009. At the beginning of the year, we communicated an investment plan that was heavily weighted to the first two quarters of the year. We continue to be on track with that guidance. Net pre-funding revenues for Q3 were $23.9 million U.S. dollars, down 36% compared to 1 year ago, reflecting the expected decreased investment during the quarter. These pre-funding revenues covered 38% of our investments in Q3. However, pre-funding has covered 53% of the company's investment for the year to date, 2010. During the quarter, 56% of our multi-client revenues came from projects in progress and 12% from fully amortized surveys. The multi-client amortization rate was 46%, within our guided range for the full year of 2010. Amortization does fluctuate from quarter to quarter depending upon the sales mix of projects. The amortization rate for the first 9 months of 2010 has been 48%, and we anticipate that the full-year amortization will be within the guided annual range of 42 to 48%. Our resulting operating profit for Q3 2010 was $53.5 million U.S. dollars, representing 41% of net revenues. This operating profit is down 9% from Q3 2009, primarily due to the higher amortization cost. Operating profit for the first 9 months of 2010 was $145.8 million, up 9% from the same period in 2009. Earnings per share in Q3 were 37 cents per share versus 48 cents per share a year ago, and earnings per share for the first 9 months of 2010 were 95 cents per share compared to $1.01 for the same period in 2009. Cash flow from operations after taxes but before investments was $109.3 million, compared to $108.7 million a year ago. Our backlog was $106.4 million at the end of Q3, and that's up from $98.1 million that we reported at the end of the previous quarter. In the wake of the Macondo incident in the Gulf of Mexico, the regulatory environment remains uncertain in the Gulf of Mexico. TGS's customers await final regulation that might be put in place after a full investigation of the incident is complete. In addition, the timing of future license rounds in the Gulf of Mexico, typically an important sales trigger for strong late sales for our company, remains unclear. Despite this uncertainty, TGS continues to receive interest in its Deepwater Gulf of Mexico library from a broad range of customers. In addition, our customers appear to be confirming their intention to grow their E&P investment in the markets in which TGS is active by utilizing new seismic data to explore for additional reserves. This has been demonstrated through the growth in TGS's backlog this quarter and the significantly higher late sales that we've announced for Q3. Vessel availability remains high, and the cost for this capacity remains low in areas in which TGS is seeing project opportunities. This allows TGS to continue to grow its advanced data library in some of the most attractive hydrocarbon basins in the world. Going into the fourth quarter of 2010, we maintain our 2010 guidance as follows. Multi-client library investments will be $300 to $330 million U.S. dollars. Average pre-funding should be in the range of 50 to 60% of our investments. An average annualized multi-client amortization rate in the range of 42 to 48% of net revenues. Net revenues in the range of $550 to $600 million U.S. dollars. And proprietary contract revenues of approximately 5% of that total revenue range. At this time, we'll open the call for your questions. Please press star 1 to pose your question. Monica, I'll turn it over to you.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you wish to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. Please ensure that the mute function on your telephone is switched off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. And we move to our first question from Mr. Ian McPherson from Simmons. Please go ahead.
Hey, good morning or good afternoon, and nice quarter, obviously. I guess what I want to know is, first, given the opacity for the Gulf of Mexico right now in the license round, how well are you able to plan 11 compared to where you've been able to plan the year ahead in prior years? And I guess what sort of scenarios are we contemplating for next year in terms of your mix of geographic mix for investment relative to history?
Yeah, Ian, you know, we're right now we're in our budgetary process for 2011. And, you know, as we communicated at the end of Q2 of 2010, when we did adjust our revenue guidance for 2010, you know, we're taking in taking into account various scenarios for the Gulf of Mexico. You know, obviously, one of those scenarios would be that there's you know, a delayed license round, or even maybe no license round in 2011. So, you know, as we go through and prepare our investment budget for 2011, you know, we're obviously doing some scenario gaming, as it were, you know, as to what we would expect to happen in one of our larger markets in the Gulf of Mexico. I can tell you that we are seeing some attractive looking projects kind of early in that budgetary process. I can tell you that there are still customers that remain interested in new data sets in the Gulf of Mexico. And I know our customers are also you know, struggling with that uncertainty, the same uncertainty we're struggling with as we plan our budgets. So what we typically do is we guide our investments after our board approves our budget, and board approval of our budget usually occurs in December. And I would anticipate that the timing of that would be identical this year. We would be prepared to come out and announce our guidance when we come out with our Q4 earnings release in February to the market in terms of what our plans are for 2011.
That's helpful. Thanks. Secondly, could you comment on the strength of late sales this past quarter, where you saw them generally?
Yeah, they were pretty broadly spread. We of course had a couple of triggers. You know, we had the Norwegian 21st round, which closed in early November, and so that was a contributor to sales in Q3. We have a large database, both 2D and a growing 3D database in offshore Norway in areas that are attractive. In fact, I think I saw a press release today that announced that there was very high activity, bid activity in the Norwegian 21st round. So I think that reinforces a lot of the sales activity we saw in that particular region. You know, we did see some late sales in West Africa associated with some of our 3D investments over the past couple of years in the African Transform Margin, and we did see some healthy late sales in Gulf of Mexico, so it was pretty broadly spread, actually.
So it wasn't a decidedly different mix from normal years?
Well, you know, the mix varies quarter by quarter, yeah. And it's related to as you can imagine, a number of factors. And in fact, you know, late sales are the hardest thing to predict in our business. You know, as we've said before, an oil company can decide the last day of the quarter to make a big data library purchase, so they can wait till the following day to the first day of the next quarter, and it's very difficult to predict. So that really tends to vary. You know, I will say that if you look historically at TGS's revenues, you know, they tend to be backloaded towards the end of the year, you know, towards Q3, Q4. It's typically for a couple of reasons. You know, companies come out and they're buying data to prepare for, the Gulf of Mexico, Central Gulf of Mexico round, which tends to be a big round for TGS on a normal basis. But they also have year-end money that they spend towards the end of the year, and that tends to be triggers for late sales. I will say that we are seeing some effect in the Gulf of Mexico from the uncertainty that the industry faces there. I think as we announced at the end of Q2, we were taking a prudent approach, and we lowered our guidance slightly on revenue as a result of the uncertainty that we saw in the Gulf of Mexico. And I think what we've seen in Q3 has sort of reinforced that slightly lower guidance.
Gotcha. Okay, thanks, Robert.
We take our next question from Mr. Paul Dahl from First Securities. Please go ahead.
Yeah, congratulations for the good quarter. Could you please update us on what the key issues are determining, the visibility for Gulf of Mexico next year? Is it the liability cap that the Congress may or may not decide on this fall, or is it the timing of the license round, or how do you see it?
Yeah, there are a couple of things happening. The regulatory body in the Gulf of Mexico, which is the Bureau of Energy Management, is has been totally reorganized, and so you have a that particular regulatory body is in a bit of flux right now. They're reestablishing and they're sort of reworking the regulation that companies will see going forward in the deepwater Gulf of Mexico. And that's everywhere, from how many inspections oil companies can expect on their deepwater rigs to what new equipment regulations might be put into place. And I think. One element of uncertainty there is, what specific new rules will be put in place for deep water drilling, and the BOEM is working on those measures now, and we'll publish those, and they've already started publishing some of those rules. I think it is positive that we've seen the formal lifting of the drilling moratorium that was lifted early. Earlier than anticipated by many. I think there are drilling permits that have now been submitted for approval, and I would expect that approval of a drilling permit will probably take a bit longer than it had in the past. And I would, I think that's probably what you're hearing from the drillers as well. It'll be interesting to see. I'm not going to hazard a guess on what might come out of the new Congress. I think you've seen as a result of Tuesday's election here over in the U.S. that we'll have a new balance of power in Washington. So it'll be interesting to see how that might pan out. I'm not willing to step out and hazard a guess on that right now, Paul. I think we'll look at that as much as you'll be looking at it going forward. But I think since about mid-July, the things we've been hearing have been good. Ever since the well was plugged in mid-July, I think you've seen the direction of regulation and the direction of comfort towards activity in the deepwater Gulf of Mexico has been moving in the positive direction. The Gulf of Mexico is, the U.S.'s most important domestic source of oil, and so I think you're gonna I think inevitably you're gonna see activity pick up there and return to some level of normalcy, even though it will probably not be certainly it won't be to the same to the same regulations that you saw pre Macondo incident.
Understand. How do you see competition in the market currently, and could you share some thoughts on why do you think it is that TGS has been more successful than peers in selling multi-client data recently?
Yeah, you know, we probably one of our biggest advantages that TGS has is our skills at project development. And that's something we really like to brag on constantly. We believe that our employees are focused, you know, almost purely on developing good multi-client projects. You look at where we have our projects. You know, we're good at putting those projects in some of the more promising exploration, you know, basins around the world. If you look at where we have our most recent modern data, specifically White Azimuth in the Gulf of Mexico, it's in an area in which it's not only a promising exploration area, we continue to see exploration success, but it's in an area where there is a lot of production development. So, for our Gulf of Mexico, or more recent Gulf of Mexico investments, we're able to draw not only from exploration budgets, but we're also able to draw from production budgets in oil companies. We like to think that that's by design. I mean, we do a good job of putting our multi-client projects in good spots. It's one of our skills.
Definitely. Well, thank you very much, and good luck.
Thanks, Paul.
Todd Scholl from RBC Capital Markets has the next question. Please go ahead.
Hey, Robert. Great quarter, guys. My question is, you guys have now around 10% of your market cap in cash. Do you have? Can you maybe talk a little bit about your plans for cash usage going forward?
Yeah, this is Christian, the CFO of TGS. Well, as Robert said initially, we're going through a budget period right now, so we're spending quite a lot of time looking at different types of investments for the next year. And obviously what we have to do is to put forward a proposal to the board that they will decide on in the February meeting to decide whether we should or how the dividend will be for 2011.
Okay. Can you guys saw pretty good interest in some of your older vintage stuff from your data library? Can you maybe talk about a little about where that actually was located geographically? Where were you seeing that area of interest in some of that older vintage data?
Yeah, I mean, you probably do your homework and go back and see where we did projects, you know, where we shot projects in those vintages, and where we did press releases and those sorts of things. We don't typically announce on a detailed regional basis where those projects come from. I know we do announce, we do show a segment breakdown of our revenues in our earnings release. Yeah, I will say that 12% of our revenues in the quarter came from projects that were pre-2006. So that 12% of those 12% of revenues was 100% profit to us. Those were fully written off the books. Sales of our 2008, 2009 vintages were also good. It was a good distribution this quarter, or a wide distribution in terms of sales across the vintages. I guess I would characterize really the spread of that being around the world, being pretty broad. But I really don't want to break it down any finer than that. We just typically don't report on that.
Okay, fair enough. Thank you.
We will take now our next question from Mr. Christopher Mollerlocken from Arctic Securities. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning, gentlemen. How would you rate Q3 versus your own internal expectations? Was this ahead of your plan, or?
I think it was pretty much on plan for us, Christopher. I think that's borne out by our maintenance of our guidance for 2010. We did adjust, as I stated before, we did adjust our guidance slightly at the end of Q2, both on the amortization side as well as the revenue side. And so Q3 came in pretty much as we expected.
So would you say that it's fair to assume that your level of comfort regarding 2010 guidance is at the same level as it was at the Q2 report?
Yeah, I think so. You've noticed we've still maintained the range, in our guidance. I don't want to leave anybody with the impression that there's not still some uncertainties out there in one of our larger markets, and I think it's prudent that we maintain that range. Typically Q4 is the biggest quarter historically from TGS in terms of late sales from our data library, and so we just need to see how now that continues to pan out. With how Q3 did come in as expected, and we are seeing good quote activity going into Q4. It's just, as you know, Christopher, in following us, a lot of our big bulk of our late sales comes towards the end of every quarter. So it's something that we just can't predict right now.
Mm-hmm. Would you say that it's mainly Gulf of Mexico which could tip the balance either towards the high end or the low end of the guidance?
I think that certainly Gulf of Mexico is typically a big contributor in Q4. And that's for a couple of reasons. One reason is we have such a large database there, and it's a large database in a very active area for both licensing and production. And that database is also 3D in 3D wide azimuth, so it carries high value in terms of revenue value for the company. Although, I will say that's growing outside of the Gulf of Mexico because we've been substantially growing our 3D investments outside of the Gulf of Mexico in West Africa and Northwest Europe. And so we're becoming more diverse with that data library. But if we were to look at our markets right now and we were to look at uncertainty in those markets, I think you'd have to say the Gulf of Mexico is the market where we see most of that uncertainty right now.
Last question. Revenues from North and South America were actually up from Q2 level despite just 16 days of acquisition of the Wide Azimuth project in Q3. Could you give any flavor? It seems like you must have increased your late sales in North and South America quite significantly despite this ongoing uncertainty post-Macondo.
Yeah, that's an accurate statement, Christopher. We were encouraged with our late sales activity in the NSA division. I will say that many of the sales that we do categorize as works in progress were late sales. Okay, so those are sales on projects that have not yet fully been complete. We're recognizing those revenues on a percent of completion basis. And in fact, we've now got 3 wide azimuth projects that are in various stages of processing right now, and so we're recognizing those revenues as we complete the processing. But we did see decent late sales from actually a pretty broad range of customers in the NSA region to support the quarter.
And just for the accounting, if you sold anything from Greenland, where would you classify that geographically?
Well, most of our database in Greenland is off the west coast of Greenland, if that's what your answer is. But if it's related to where we report that, it's the Europe-Russia segment that we report the Greenland revenues.
Thank you.
Sure.
Amy Vong from UBS has our next question. Please go ahead.
Hi, Robert. Good afternoon. Oh, good morning for you. Just a couple of quick questions. How would you categorize the reaction of your customers, both independents and international oil companies, in terms of you saying that they are still quite active and looking for, you know, late sales, buying data from your multi-client library? But would you categorize their reactions a little bit different? You know, some groups are a bit more enthusiastic than others. And then the second question is, you do highlight that you have high sales activities in all of your major markets, so that envelops your entire global portfolio. Can you kind of break that down a little bit more in terms of Eastern, Western Hemisphere, and maybe perhaps a more regional breakdown? Thanks.
Well, in our earnings release, you see that we report our revenues in terms of in segments, and we report those segments now as you can look at Note 4 in the earnings release. We report those segments in North and South America, Europe, Russia, Africa, Middle East, Asia Pacific. Those are our major seismic segment regions. Our sales were up a bit over the same period a year ago in the Eastern Hemisphere, mm-hmm. and for a couple of reasons. You know, we were more active, I believe, than a year ago, probably in West Africa, and of course, our late sales were pretty good in Europe related to the Norwegian 21st round. I will say that sales in the Gulf of Mexico again have followed the adjustments we made at the end of Q2. I think that the market can be characterized as probably not as robust in the Gulf of Mexico as what we had hoped pre-Macondo incident. In terms of the types of customers that are buying our data, it's still pretty broad, and it's still as expected. I mean, we are still seeing decent sales from the small guys, the aggressive exploration companies in our areas, as well as the large super majors and NOCs. I don't think there's been much of a change in sort of the customer mix, really.
All right, great. Thank you very much.
We will now take our next question from Mr. Robert Pulleine from Morgan Stanley. Please go ahead.
Good morning. Just one question. In the outlook, you mention that at the moment, capacity for doing your investments is currently quite cheap, obviously due to the overcapacity in the vessel market. How long do you expect that to continue? And obviously, does that lead to a need to invest sooner rather than later before prices tick back upwards? Thank you very much.
Yeah, Robert, we watch that really closely. We've got a member of our executive team that's his primary role, is to really monitor the vessel markets for us. Anytime we do take a vessel on charter, we always try to lock in some price going forward through options, and we continue to do that. There is still quite a bit of vessel capacity yet to come out into the market in 2011. That is, obviously counterbalanced by expected increased demand in seismic, potentially in 2011. So we're constantly, trying to predict where that supply-demand comes into balance. It's our expectation that certainly in the last, in the first part of 2011, we believe vessel supply is going to continue to be prevalent or continue to be available to us in the areas that we need it, and probably even past the first half of 2011 as well. It's tough to predict past that, but I think looking into 2011, we're still encouraged about the availability of capacity for us at the current rates that we're seeing right now.
Thank you.
Thank you. We'll take the next question from Quirijn Mulder from ING. Please go ahead. Your line is open to ask a question. Mulder. Your line is open to ask a question. It appears she stepped away from the desk. We'll take our next question from Morten Nystrøm from Fearnley. Please go ahead.
Hi, Robert. Just a follow-up question on the last question regarding vessel availability. If I'm correct, I think you had chartered four high-capacity vessels 1 year ago for, let's say, first quarter 2010. And as far as I know, you have only chartered the Fugro vessels for first quarter of 11. It is a reflection of your, let's say, budget plan not been approved yet, or also in connection with the information you gave us around pricing and how you see development on that going forward. Should we therefore expect you to short vessels now over the next couple of months, or will you still wait? Thanks.
Yeah, you know, in a market, Morten, that we're in right now, you know, when we come up with a project, we can go out and seek a vessel in that particular area and pick it up at a pretty favorable rate. So that doesn't require us to take on right now sort of long charters, because when you do take a long charter, you're forced to mobilize between project to project, and as you very well know, that's inefficient. You know, it's inefficient usage of a vessel in terms of cost. So, you know, in a market that we're in, you know, you know, when we're ready to start a project, we're able to get a vessel, and so we're not going to lock something in for a longer period of time. You know, we did communicate at the beginning of the year that our investments would be decreasing in Q3, Q4. It's always been the plan. We'll be coming in within guidance on our investments for 2010, so we're on track with that. You know, as we start new projects, and when we are able to announce those new projects, you'd also see us announce simultaneously vessel charters to accomplish those projects.
Good, because you know, if you look at the seismic companies such as CGG, Western Geco, PGS, and also Paul Larkus, all companies are basically starting to book the majority of the available capacity for first quarter. So based on that and the fact that you have only chartered one vessel in for the first quarter of 11 compared to, let's say, four vessels last year, I would assume that you would start relatively soon to charter vessel for the first half or at least first quarter 11.
Yeah, you know, again, when we're prepared to announce a project, we'll announce a charter. I can tell you, Morten, that when we call out and we look for vessels in certain areas, I can tell you we're getting bids on them. So there is capacity out there, you know, we're not having, you know, for example, you know, as we talk to customers, pre-funding customers about new projects, and we simultaneously go out and look for capacity in that particular area to accomplish the project, we're getting bids and getting proposals, and there does not seem at this point to be any timing issues related to that.
Final question, if I may. If you look at it's a question regarding the cancellation of the Angola project. Can you elaborate somewhat what was the reason for Sonangol to, let's say, stop the project, or are not able to disclose that? Thanks and good luck.
Yeah, thanks, Morten. Angola, we had anticipated starting the Angola project in Q3. We had an agreement to acquire multi-client data over some blocks in Angola, the Sonangol elected to terminate that agreement with us for that specific survey at that specific time over those blocks. I will say that we are still talking to Sonangol, and there are discussions still ongoing between TGS and Sonangol, and we hope to be back there. I think this was more of an issue related to timing of the survey and maybe more, you know, maybe an issue of the best way in Sonigal's mind to accomplish the data collection versus the timing of the data collection. And that's all I can say at this point.
We'll move to our next question from Tor Lunder from DNB Nor. Please go ahead.
Hi, guys. I have one question regarding the ARPA licensing round. How important is the timing on that, whether it's fourth quarter or first quarter, for your sales in terms of the uplift that you probably will get?
We have an extensive, primarily 2D data library over blocks that are included in the ARPA licensing round, and they always play a role for companies that are looking to participate in that round. It is, however, you know, a smaller round and a smaller has a smaller effect to us than the biannual big exploration frontier exploration rounds that Norway have. So, you know, I wouldn't characterize it as having a huge impact, you know, on TGS.
Okay, thanks. And one more question on the U.S. Gulf of Mexico. Were the spending patterns among oil companies pretty much business as usual, or was it more triggered by changing hands of acreage, etc., some people leaving the U.S. Gulf of Mexico, selling their blocks to other oil companies?
Yeah, I would say the sales were motivated by sort of regular regular exploration activity by companies that are either evaluating acreage for either asset purchases or license round participation, or it's companies that already have acreage holdings in particular areas. I wouldn't categorize there being any unusual activity in the quarter related to any kind of asset transfers. We haven't seen that.
Okay, thanks.
We will take our next question from Quirijn Mulder from ING. Please go ahead.
Yeah, can you hear me now?
Yes,
we can.
Yeah, thank you. I have two questions. If the Norwegian state speaks about, let me say, that the number of oil companies has reduced with interest for the 21st of licensing round from 46 to 37, has that any impact on your the number of applicants for your library or not? And that's my first question. And the second question is with regard to the licensing round, that will be decided who gets income or not, or the license in the spring. Could that have some impact on your revenues in the first quarter, on the fact that sometimes there's success fee related to multi-client selling? Late multi-client sales.
Yeah, I'll take your the second question first, if I can. We typically don't see uplift sort of revenues in the Gulf of Mexico. It's really not part of our sales model there. So I wouldn't expect there to be an effect there in the Gulf of Mexico. In regards to the first question that you had, I think we saw pretty good activity, pretty good sales activity in for the 21st round. It looks like the Norwegian government seems to be pretty happy with the response for the licensing round. And I think it performed, our data library and the data that we had in that round performed to expectations. So, I mean, the number of companies that you quoted in your question is still a tremendous number of participants in an exploration round, and TGS is one of the, we have one of the largest databases associated with that round.
Okay, but then to come back on my second question, is there not something like a success fee when it is being announced by the Norwegian government who gets the license or not?
Okay, yeah, on your second question, I thought you were referring to the Gulf of Mexico. I would also say that uplifts associated with our Norway business, associated with the 21st round, that kind of sales model is not prevalent as well. I mean, most companies are buying licenses just straight up for cash to evaluate acreage for the round in that market, as they do in the Gulf of Mexico. So it's not a big component to our sales model there.
Okay, thank you.
We have a follow-up question from Mr. Paul Dahl from First Securities. Please go ahead.
Yes, thank you. Could you say what was driving the order intake? I think it was 138 million in the quarter. Was it the projects which are in progress, or was it new projects to be announced?
Are you speaking to the increase in our backlog numbers that we reported?
Yes.
Yeah, so we reported $106 million in backlog, and that was up a bit from, I guess, 98 the previous quarter. A lot of that, I'll have to say, is we added quite a bit of backlog in our well log division. We've seen a big pickup in well log activity, particularly associated with the resource plays in onshore U.S. We're seeing a lot of interest in new products that we have there, specifically related to directional surveys for wells, where oil companies are looking to assure enhance their ability to produce these oil shales and gas shales. So I think that we have. It's encouraging to see that particular product line really kind of pick up, and that's where we saw a lot of our backlog increase in the third quarter. We also maintained our backlog elsewhere in some of our other regions in our seismic business as well. We have a pretty good backlog in our Africa Middle East division, where we're conducting a large 3D survey there.
Definitely, I think the Develop Data is contributing with some 17 to 20 million per quarter in revenues. How do you see that segment developing over the next 3 to 5 years?
I'm sorry, which segment are you speaking of, Paul?
The geological products.
Yeah. Yeah, that's an really interesting area, and it's an area where we've been really successful in growing our products steadily in the higher and higher end value products. We started with delivering images of well logs to oil companies. We're now delivering. We've increased the technology deliverables to our oil companies to allow them to do quantitative petrophysical analysis for oil shales going forward. And as we've grown those well log products, we've seen an increase in the prices that we can charge for those products, and clearly the value is being reflected in the growth of that business. It still remains about 15% of our business, but as our revenues have grown, that product line has really kept up to speed with overall revenue growth for the company. I see that continuing. There's a lot of really interesting mileage, I think, to be gained in sort of the geologic product space. There are, and that's particularly in areas where you might have data products that aren't necessarily available in a multi-client fashion right now. And TGS is really good at being able to take technologies and data products and successfully marketing those on a multi-client basis. Most of our recent acquisitions have been sort of in this space, and we've been good at picking up smaller companies, but they deliver very high-value products. And we've been very successful at taking those products and those technologies and growing them. And I don't expect that to change.
Of course, hard to know, but would it be possible to double that kind of revenue in a three-year time frame?
That would be nice. It would be great. That's pretty high growth. I'll certainly tell our managers that manage that part of the business. I'll challenge them with your goal there.
Sounds good. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. We now move to our next question from Igor Domataitis from Terra Markets. Please go ahead.
Hello. First of all, I wanted to ask about the licensing round in the Central Gulf of Mexico. Just I know that uncertainty is very high, but what are your expectations? Do you think it is more likely that it will take place as usually in March, or maybe it is more likely that it will be postponed somewhat to settle all the regulations in there?
Yeah, it's very difficult to tell right now. The BOEM, which is the new name for the regulatory body for the oil industry in the U.S., it used to be called the Minerals Management Service, or MMS, they will typically announce, or they have to by regulation or by law, they have to announce a license round 90 days prior to the license round. The Central Gulf of Mexico round typically occurs the third week of March, so you would expect that we will have to hear something. If it is to occur the third week of March, we would expect to hear something by mid-December on that license round. So anytime between now and mid-December, both our customers and us are waiting to see what might be coming in terms of a formal, an announcement out of the BOEM. To date, they've not announced anything officially at all. So we just have to wait and see. And it's too tough to call right now.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And if this round is postponed, then would you end up with lower revenues than you guide now, or not necessarily? And what could offset this possibly?
Yeah, when we set our current guidance, and I guess that was at the end of Q2, we lowered the lower range of our revenue guidance slightly, and we did that because we sat down and we as a team discussed what the various scenarios might be arising in the Gulf of Mexico from the Deepwater Horizon incident and the government response to that. And I can tell you that in looking at those scenarios, we took into account either a delay or cancellation of a license round in 2011, which we believe was the prudent thing to do to take a possible delay into account. So we feel like we've assumed sort of a worst case scenario as it relates to timing on a Gulf of Mexico license round, and therefore we've lowered the lower end of our revenue guidance, but we've kept the high end in place to account for really kind of all eventual possibilities.
Okay, great. And my last question is about the pre-funding. It was quite low in Q3, 38%. Why was that? And in general, what trend do you see in the market with regards to pre-funding levels?
Yeah. Pre-funding levels in our business vary quarter by quarter, and it depends on a few factors, one of which is which projects we're working on. We'll oftentimes carry a lower pre-funding level, or be willing to start a project with a lower pre-funding amount in an area that's more mature, that might have many more clients in it than in frontier areas, for example, where there are fewer customers. The other factor is timing of when we actually get the commitments from the customers on any given project, and that's different from how many of our other peers in the industry report pre-funding. The way TGS categorizes pre-funding is any funding commitment that we get signed prior to the sanction of a project. by our executive team. And so we cut off that, what we call pre-funding, at that point once we sanction the project. If any sales come after that, even, you know, as we've started the project, and any customer signs an agreement after we've started the project, we categorize that as late sales. Now, many of the peers in our industry will categorize any sale that takes place before the project's complete as pre-funding or early sales. Versus late sales, which they will sometimes categorize, which is what they'll categorize a sale that occurs after a project's complete, it's on the shelf, and you're done completing that. The reason why we report pre-funding the way we do is we think it's important to our investors to recognize and to be able to determine the level of risk that we take on our projects. And so we want to be able to communicate, you know, what funding levels that we see before we decide to commit to a project. In Q3, it happened that we had our projects that for whatever reason at that time, you know, we had lower pre-funding recognized on those investments in Q3 due to that particular product mix. I will point out, however, that, you know, sales were very high on our works in progress, you know, greater than 50%. So those projects that we were completing during the quarter, we saw high levels of commitments to those projects.
Okay, and what has changed since the last quarter, let's say, in your clients' behavior with their willingness to pre-fund? Is it the same, or is that level lower now than before?
Well, it of course depends on the region. I think as you would expect, I think customers in the Gulf of Mexico look at investments across their E&P value chain. They're probably scrutinizing those investments probably harder, given the uncertainty that we all face right now. I think we're hearing that when we talk to customers about new projects that we have on the board for the Gulf of Mexico going forward. I think globally, I would characterize their, you know, overall, you know, there's probably not been a lot of change in our customers' willingness to pre-fund projects.
Okay, thank you very much for your answers.
Thank you.
We have a follow-up question from Morten Nystrøm from Fearnley. Please go ahead.
Yes, just a follow-up question on your comments, Robert, on the opportunities you see in the Gulf of Mexico going forward. if you look at the, let's say, the Gulf of Mexico and you map in the White Estimate Service, which has been acquired since 2006 in the Central Gulf, but also in the Western Gulf. Is it fair to say that how should we look at this? Should we expect, the majors to continue investing in White Estimate in the Gulf of Mexico over the next 2 years, or is it, let's say, more conventional surveys you're now looking into in regions which are not the so-called subsalt regions? Thanks.
It's Martin, this is Karen. In the Gulf, you know, we do see customers that are continuing to have interest in the White Azimuth programs. You know, the area that TGS has acquired, the White Azimuth program, is one of the most prolific oil-producing areas in the Gulf and in the deep water of the Gulf of Mexico. So that's going to continue to drive interest levels. There has been a lot of White Azimuth shot in the Gulf over the last few years. And so continued development will probably not be as rapid as what we've seen the last few years, but there is still interest. And I think you'll see the oil companies and the large independents continuing to invest in White Azimuth, as well as other technologies that may add value. But the subsalt trend is still an area that they're very interested in improving imaging on, even in areas of existing White Azimuth.
Final question. We're starting to hear some rumors that we will see some, let's say, lease sales in Brazil. Probably not subsalt before 2012, but at least lease sales also possibly in 2011. What is your strategy in Brazil? Thanks again.
Yeah, we've you know, as you know, we've got an extensive 2D data library, probably the largest, one of the largest 2D data libraries in Brazil, through a partnership we've had with Western GECO over the past years. We've been renewing that data library by going back and applying our latest depth imaging technology to it, so we have very fresh data throughout really all the basins of Brazil. So, you know, we're prepared to take advantage of any kind of upcoming license rounds that might be announced in Brazil. We also see that market as probably one of the more promising multi-client markets going forward for the industry, particularly in the Western Hemisphere. So you can bet that TGS will continue to look at that and look for additional investments there.
There are no further questions.
Thank you, Monica, and thank you, everybody else, for your questions and for your attention today. We look forward to being able to talk to you again in early February, and we'll be able to do our earnings release for Q4 of 2010 at that point. We'll also guide on our expectations for 2011 as well. We look forward to talking to you then. Thank you.
Thank you. That will conclude today's conference call. Thank you for your participation. Ladies and gentlemen, you may now disconnect.